Hi, and welcome to the International Writers Network. And as usual, we have a wonderful time for you. And we are joined today by a wonderful Christian poet, Christina Molloy. I hope I've got her name right today, Molloy. And she's here to share her poetry, her background. She's been on the platform before, so this is really an extension, because with writing, so many things happen in your life that develops and makes you grow. And we have a particular theme this month that hopefully is going to help us and challenge us as writers. So Christina, with all my heart, I welcome you to this platform. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm very well, thank you.
And I hope you're enjoying the sun. Global warming or not, there's a sun in Ireland and everybody's having a good time.
Yes, thank God for this. Yeah, absolutely. Well, also, my father was a man who was quite light-hearted, so he would always say, keep on the sunny side. Yeah, so I kind of like the fact... Everything just has a sense of timing around my father. So he died just before Christmas, and that was in the depth of winter. And then his birthday is in the summer, on the 22nd of June. So that's the shortest night of the year, although his mother said it was the longest. But and now it's sunny times, and now things are coming together, and we've buried his ashes, and my brother's back, and his partner just said, oh, you can take his car, so we have his car outside now. And just there's a sense of timing, so I feel this is a good time just to reflect a bit on him and his wonderful influence.
This is really wonderful. Now, Christina, you're just to take you back, because we are good today. The theme for this month is fathers, and you rightfully said, we put it right at the front there. Your father passed away just before Christmas, and yet he has his birthday, shortest day of the year, which is a sunny day, and so to merge the two, this is the first year of his loss, and again, condolences for that loss. And we're going to learn a bit about how that influenced your writing, and grief does influence our writing, relationship influences our writing. Now, just to take us back a bit, just want to say, you're a member of the Irish Christian Writer because you write Christian poetry. Do you write other types of poetry?
Yes, honestly, I write everything. So it's just what I'm finding is I write about all sorts of things. And in my writing groups, I don't only write about gospel themes or something. I write about my own life. But I just find, since my own faith has come back, it's more and more intertwined. So I see more and more things just like a metaphor for that, you know. So I might write without a single mention of God or something, but yet it's always shining through. And then maybe I get a word with it at the end, or, you know, there's a theme of redemption or forgiveness or joy. So I don't know how to say that other than, I'm sidelining, but I didn't always believe, especially after our mother died as a teenager. So I completely lost my faith for a good many years, the faith that I had very strongly as a child. But thank God I did get my faith back, and it was restored, and it's on the inside now, so I feel like nobody can take it away ever again. And the only thing I can compare it to is like having a child. So once your child is there, I mean, maybe you have to keep it secret for some reason, but it's still always going to be your child and going to be a reality. And even if, God forbid, something happens to that child, or they're far from you, or, you know, die before you or anything, nothing can take that away ever again. So that's how I feel now about my faith. So my faith will affect everything, even my rising.
Right.
In the same way that having a child, even when they're not there, sort of affects you in a different way, in a whole new way.
Absolutely. And no, so when they fly the nest, they'll fly in the nest, but they're still right with you in the spirit.
Yes, totally. you can't undo being a mother. So my oldest girl is nearly 30 now, but it doesn't matter what age they are or you are, or if they're suffering or anything, you're suffering with them. So it's the same way for your own child, but also with your own parents, I feel. So that's why it's such a loss, actually, when they die, because as my mom once wrote to her friend, losing a parent's like losing a limb. So we in our family were so used to having lost our mother early. We were teenagers. But we always relied on Dad always being there. So losing him is now like losing the other limb in a way. But it's very different too. But to be honest, I mean, they're both there, especially my dad now, so strongly in spirit. So I just kind of see them forever young. They're just in heaven now. It's just a different realm. They're just under the water. So I was swimming earlier and we're surface level. But as soon as you put your head under the water, it's a whole different world. We're just in different realms, but they're still there. And they both actually had strong faith in their own way, but in different ways anyway. And that's something they've passed on to me. And that's something I'm very grateful for. Yeah, it's such a comfort.
Now, you said two different worlds, they're in another realm. And, of course, your first book that you wrote, Between Two Worlds, what were you trying? Just tell us just very briefly, just really briefly, concerning that book, so we're going to try and put it all together for ourselves. The way you looked at death just now was that, well, they're in another realm, and hopefully we're going to get to that realm. But you actually wrote a book, Between Two Worlds. Do you want to tell us the thought behind that? That title is very intriguing to me.
But Woods Between the Worlds, as a child, Dad used to read me the Narnia books, and I was always intrigued with the wood between the worlds, where you jump into, you know, the different pools, and they bring you into different realms. And that just always intrigued me. So, I mean, looking back, my parents were quite unusual. I mean, they had a lot of struggles too. For example, when my mum had me, her womb burst, and that led to emergency hysterectomy, and she went into a coma for a month. And that led to kind of a psychotic breakdown, really, and a lot of medication and things in her life. So there was a lot of addiction on her side too. That was a struggle. And my dad also had struggles with what you call it. It used to be called manic depression, but now it's called bipolar. But he was a very brilliant, creative man, but that was his struggle. But I'm just saying, those things don't sound great on paper, and they really were difficult at times. But for all that, what I realized today is that has been such a blessing for me. Like, my dad was, I mean, growing up, I don't even know how to describe it, but anyone who knew him, to know him was to love him, but he totally broke the mold. So if he could do it one way, he'd do it the other way. Not necessarily for the sake of it, but he just had no time for red tape. And
I love it. I have no time for your tips.
Yeah, and he was always making little poems up, or he'd come to arrivals to collect me and he'd go through those glass doors the other way. I remember when I first came back with my baby from Holland, and I said, "Dad, how did you get through the doors?" But he was always doing little quirky things like that. So, and now he sometimes would have to go for recuperation in Edmondsbury and things, and that wasn't always easy. And then my mom wasn't always well, and that was a strain too. So he was at Edmondsbury when we had a house fire. Well, mum was on, strong medication and drinking and smoking, and that caused our house fire. So that was deeply traumatic. And I would not wish that on anyone. I don't know, my worst enemy. I try not to have enemies today because we just have to forgive. There's just no getting around it. Anytime we don't forgive, it just bubbles up and makes us unwell. So I always try to forgive. And when it comes back, because there is things that are painful or things that happen that are difficult. Like my dad met someone else and that was great. He was very happy with her, but we weren't really as included at that part of his life. And that was quite painful at times, but he still always came here and was very hands-on with my children, his grandchildren, who he loves so much. And I'm just so grateful for that today. They all loved him. We were around his bedside when he died then. So it was all quite sudden. He had a heart attack on the Sunday and he died on the Thursday. So we were with him, we were holding his hand. My daughter Maria put some music on her phone. So it was playing Oh Holy Night as he passed over. Fall on your knees. Oh, hear the angel voices. Oh, night divine. Oh, night when Christ was born. Oh, night divine. Oh, night. Oh, holy night. So I'm sure my dad would have loved that song to be playing.
Gosh, you make it sound so beautiful. Now, having I'm really, again, condolences. It's still very fresh, and I'm so glad that you came on this thing. How now that you're, how did, because obviously you spoke that he used to write little poems and everything, and so how was his influence on your, are you now, because you're a writer, you're a published writer, poet, you perform in different places. How did that influence, how did, how, what was his influence on your work? Directly or
I'd say,
indirectly?
yeah, I'd say it was huge. Really huge. I mean, both my parents, my mom too, she was very prophetic, or would say, "I know you're lying because I can see a cross on your forehead," or she just no, honestly.
I'll give up there at the end. Yes, here it is, Mom.
She would just, or "Why did you get into that car?" Or there was no even point in trying to lie to her. She was just unbelievably prophetic. I think really she had a gifting, and so did her sister and her mom, Oma, who knew when her son was killed in the war and everything. It's just it wasn't called that maybe then. And Mom used to say, "I don't like that. I don't like that." But there were lots of things throughout her life. I remember one day, for example, coming home from school, she had the photo album open and it was all pictures of the bishop at the time. I think it was Bishop Eamon Ryan or someone. And so she was Lutheran. My dad was Irish Catholic. She was German Lutheran. But so when they got married in Cambridge, they went to both churches. But it's quite a big deal at the time. But so she had to sign a thing that she would also rear the children Catholic or something. So we would go 3 Sundays to the Catholic church, which we loved, which I loved, and the folk group and singing, dancing a song of joy, for he says, love your neighbor. That's one of the many songs my dad would put words to and send into the radio. But we'd also go to the German Lutheran church once a month. And we loved that too. And that had Ernte Dankfest and a really nice Sunday school, and was a bit more quieter at Christmas time with a real tree and real candles, and always beautiful. So I'm seeing that as a blessing now, that we grew up with both cultures and both religions too, which is really makes it much easier to transcend all the denominational stuff, which is really so irrelevant on the scheme of things. What matters is, does the car work? Yes or no? Is it reliable? That's what counts, not what make the car is. That's so irrelevant. So that's, it's just the football team. Like, God sees the heart and God is love. So I did get that, which I'm grateful for. But also, because they were both out there, you know, they weren't ordinary in any sense of the word. So I also had spiritual experiences and things growing up, like where I'd actually see things under the bed. Or I remember seeing once, I'd wait for my dad coming back from work, and he'd let me drive the car into the garage, even though I was like a kid. But I remember seeing, did you see that, Dad? What? It was like a crown of thorns just around me, and it lit up. And he said, no, really, wow. But, you know, he believed me. I see some parents, or just even people, who'd be like, that's all nonsense, that's all in your head. Or that is one thing neither of them did. They both really encouraged imagination. They believed you if you told them something. I saw a hand knocking on the window, Mum. And she went, oh, right, yeah, well, that's just God. You see, he's telling you, Teeny, to, I don't know, I was doing something or other naughty. But they what I'm saying is, they believed it. They never undermined me or said, that's just nonsense or something. So they really did encourage my spiritual side. And there was no question but that there was a whole spiritual realm, and even though that was sometimes dark, but like we all heard, sometimes Mom would say, it's the footsteps in the attic, and we could hear them, like. But I realized today there really are demonic forces, just as there are good forces, and God's force is much stronger. But so that's why I'm grateful. I'm so grateful today, like, I weep for them both, my mother and my father, and how things might have ended up but didn't. But I'm just so grateful from having experienced them just as they were. My dad particularly, his mother Bessie was also a gorgeous woman, very godly, and loved poetry. So they always encouraged our plays or our poems or reading stories and just imagination in general. Mom would even say, oh, stay at home from school. And I'd say things like, well, I've already missed a week. So I was kind of unofficially homeschooled for a lot of the time. Listen, not that I'm advocating that, but I mean, for me, it was great, because I don't think I'd be the writer or person I am today if I'd had very old school parents. But still, in all, a little bit more stability would have been fun too. But thankfully, we would sometimes go to our Irish grandparents for that and have a great time there with all our cousins, and go to Germany in the summers and see our granny there and our auntie. And it's also very good to have stability as well. So it's always a balance, really.
Right. Now, mm-hmm. On that note, your father, you found some poetry notes of your dad. Would you like to read that to us? We've got literally about 10 minutes left. Time is ticking.
Oh my
So
goodness,
yeah, when you're
sure.
having fun. So just because that, I mean, when you told me about that, that was such an exciting, because here is a father and a mother that influenced, but this month we're talking about fathers. There's a father that influenced in so many ways without knowing, and he's brought that now. I mean, obviously he knew you wrote Poem before you, before he left us, but how much more now? Because you're going to read a letter one of when of one of the poems you wrote after he passed away. And you have been writing lots of wonderful poems since he left. So just that one that you found very briefly, please.
Sure, I'll read that. But just to say it, I didn't want to make it sound like he was totally flaky or anything like that. Like, he also brought us ho horse riding and loads of fun things. He loved his grandkids. He gave Peter his first taste of food. He gave him ice cream at 4 months old. I'd say, Dad, he's not even weaned. And he'd brains to burn. So, like, he would love te helping them with homework or teaching them Esperanto or speaking to Italians. You could just ask him about anything and he'd know stuff. And he wouldn't just bring Kit Kats, he'd bring, peanut flavored Kit Kats, or not just ice cream, but brown bread ice cream. Or he was always had to go for the novel or the new or something different. He had a very, very creative mind. So, spoke loads of languages, and the ones he didn't speak, he just give a stab at. So, he just, sometimes that kind of mind is a little bit, you have to manage it because it can be a little bit ADD when you're always curious and always seeing the next thing. But he also had his mellow side, especially in later years. Although he never thought of himself as old, and in my mind, he's really forever young. So just last Sunday was actually a very emotional day, and my brother came too. We saw my in-laws for the first time in ages because my father-in-law has been unwell and has radiotherapy, and my mother-in-law has a new hip and things. Anyway, so after that, we picked up a few more of his belongings from my stepmother, and in among the belongings and all the other things to sort out, there was this beautiful letter that he'd written out in his handwriting. Now, I've since found out he didn't actually write it, but he wrote it down in his handwriting, and it was dated Ballymun, 2nd of November. It's just like a month before he died. So I don't know if somewhere in his spirit, there was some sense or something that it will be time. I don't know. But I'll be forever grateful. He was here for his birthday and my big girl's birthday, and we saw him in the Rose Garden in St. Anne's. And I'm just glad we had that time to spend together. And we spend most days remembering little Opa Flynn isms that he used to make up, like, I'm not Flynn, I'm offline. I'm Opa Flynn offline. He was always doing these little funny things with words. Anyway, so I felt this was genuinely a gift from God, to have found just Sunday. So here it is. Letter from heaven. To my loving family, some things I'd like to say. First of all, to let you know that I've arrived okay. I'm writing this from heaven, where I dwell with God above, where there's no more tears or sadness. There's just eternal love. Please do not be unhappy just because I'm out of sight. Remember that I'm with you every morning, every night. The day I had to leave you because my life on earth was through, God picked me up and hugged me, and he said, I welcome you. It's good to have you back again. You were missed when you were gone. And as for your loving family, they'll be coming later on. I need you here so badly as part of my big plan. There's so much that we have to do to help our mortal man. Then he gave me a list of things he wished for me to do. Foremost on that list of mine was to watch and care for you. And I will be beside you every day and week and year. And when you're sad, I'm standing there to wipe away the tears. And as you lie awake at night, the day's chores put to flight, I'll be even closer to you in the middle of the night. When you think of my life on earth and all the living years, because you're only human, they are bound to bring you tears. But do not be afraid to cry. It does resolve the pain. Remember, there would be no flowers if it wasn't for the rain. I wish that I could tell you of all that God has planned. But if I were to tell you, you wouldn't understand. But one thing is for certain, though my life on earth is over, I'm closer to you now than I ever was before. And to my family and friends, trust God knows what's best. I'm not far away from you. I'm just beyond the crest. When you're walking down the street and you've got me on your mind, I'm walking there behind you, only half a step behind. And when you feel that gentle breeze as a wind upon your face, that's me giving you a great big hug or just a soft embrace. And when it's time for you to go from your body to be free, remember you're not going. You are coming here to me. And I will always love you from that land up above. But until we get in touch again, I just send all my love.
Oh, that is, you know what, we've come so close to the end, and it's such a beautiful way to always remind people. And you read it like a father, like your father was speaking to you. And I feel other people will have people up there in heaven saying that's what it's been said to you, that, you know, if you're here, people have lost during COVID and during so many situations. And we find ourselves without the love, people we love, especially fathers who are so dear to us. Well, listen, Christina, I love to hear that poem. I remember your smile, especially a bit of your father, please.
Okay. Carry me. I used to say that to him. Carry me. I remember your smile, your joy, your lovable face. I remember your lifts, your care, your encouragement for the race. I remember your songs, quick mind, and even your mistakes. I remember your willingness to take the hits, but always with good grace. I remember your leaflets, your love of words, and sweet cakes. I remember your free spirit, even at a slower pace. I remember our dad beyond time and space.
Oh, that is so, Christina. Thank you so much for being with us today. And
you're welcome.
This is Near FM
90.3.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
Raised on songs and stories.
Hello. Jerry Cooley here, inviting you to join me every Wednesday at 2 o'clock here on Near FM for Raised on Songs and Stories.
It's a good day when you put your feet to the ground, don't mind me telling it to you, even if this is...
So weren't we reared on
them? The Digital Experience. Missed a programme or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
90.3. This is Near FM.
And welcome to the International Writers Network. And in this episode, we have a wonderful creative writer, poet, Brid Connolly. I should actually call her Dr. Brid Connolly. But she's been very, very humble. And I've got here Britt Connolly, but she's actually well versed. She's a retired adult community education. She retired from at the National University of Ireland, and she studied philosophy at the National University of Ireland, Maynooth. And she is just, and she also participated, which I'm going to ask about later, the End Social Economic Discrimination in Ireland. End Social Economic Discrimination in Ireland. Right. I would love to know what that's all about and how that, how her writing goes into that. And she lives in Maynooth. She's also participated in lots of Sunflower Session. And but she is at heart an education officer who loves to educate adults who've missed out. Because I remember going to adult education and they just help you to relive some things you may have missed in school. So we salute you for that place, that role you've played in many, many lives. And we also welcome you as a creative writer onto this platform. How are you, Dr.
I'm very well, and thank you, Mary, for such a wonderful welcome. I really appreciate it, and it is. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, that's fantastic. First of all, you know, we'd like to know about the writer themselves, where they're from, and I've given some introduction. But if I was to give you 1 minute to talk about Britt Connolly, what would you like people to take away today?
Well, I suppose I really do believe that adult education made me, even though I studied and I enjoyed school and everything. But I suppose adult education really brought me into new eras, new lives and so on. But also it helped me to develop things that would probably have been dormant otherwise. And I really do enjoy learning, and I do enjoy working with people in an adult education context. And I suppose I come from the inner city myself, even though I've left it a long time. And that has really left an indelible mark on the way I think.
Right, that's fantastic. Now, how does that link with your writing? Because you're also a creative writer and a poet.
Well, I love writing. I would have always written from the time I was a very small child, and I was an early reader. And I remember the first thing that was ever published, which was a letter to a radio program called Dear Sir or Madam. And my letter didn't win a prize, but it was read out on the radio, and I was so thrilled to hear that. So the first things that I started writing really were about where I came from in the inner city, because all around us we could see the lives of people in sort of really in plain sight. My mother was a baker, and my father worked in a tea, wine and spirit merchants in Thomas Street. And I suppose because of that, we really were sort of like in a public space, in a community space. Because Francis Street, where I grew up, was really like a community. It was like a small village. And all my father's friends from work would have been people that he would have known for years, and they would all have been part of our lives, in our family lives, as well as in my father's life. So it really was like belonging to this very warm, welcoming community.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like a bit of heaven when you have a community and you all know each other, and which
exactly.
Obviously is very difficult to get now, but I can imagine how amazing. And would you have written about the different characters, your father's friends and people like that, or different situations that happen? Would you have written about those situations?
For sure, because I suppose that's the thing about it's sort of the power of writing, as you were saying earlier on, that you can do some things in writing that is so different from just thinking. I kind of think of thinking as unshaped, maybe a little bit superficial, sort of bouncing all over the place. So it's very hard to pin down thinking and your imagination and so on. Whereas when you start writing, you begin to capture sort of the wildness of your thinking, and it makes more sense to you when you see something that you've written. And John McGarren, the wonderful writer, was saying that what he thought about writing was that it helped him to see what he was thinking. He didn't know what he was thinking until he wrote. So in many ways, that's the way I think about it as well, that I don't know what I'm thinking until I write it down. And of course, there was a full array of people that came to our house. I suppose one of the unusual things is that we grew up over a shop, because as I was saying, my mother was a baker. And when you have separate shopkeepers, there's no tea break. You know, people haven't, like if you were working in a factory or any place else, there'd be a tea break. So everybody, all the people would come to my mother's bakehouse for their tea break, and she'd have beautiful scones and everything. For the 11 o'clock cup of tea. It was absolutely fascinating to think about it afterwards. We just thought it was normal at the time. So you'd really see these people up close, laughing and joking and telling stories and everything. So it was just ideal in terms of somebody like myself who loved just watching and listening and writing.
Oh, right. It sounds like a piece of movie, you know, that people go to your mum for 11 season scones and jam.
That's
and
right.
Cream and, do you know what I'm saying? I could just see them, do you know? But then again, that's because of the flavour you have with your words. You know what? With that, let's just have, first of all, your first poem called Ladybird. If you want to maybe just tell us a little bit about that, but the poem itself is something for me, as I was telling you.
Oh, you're so kind. Well, my father
died. This is all about kindness of the bird. When I read
you
and I engage with it, and it teaches me things. I think writers are teachers, but they do it with words. And like you said, they transport you to villages, to things, to places where you would never be able to go. But in the writing, as you've done that, let's have that ladybird. And I'm telling in truth, it's not a gimmick.
Well, I suppose my father was a very unusual man at the time. So that is, I was born in the 1950s. And because my mother was a baker, and obviously he was a sort of what was called at that particular time and in sociology, an unskilled manual worker. But he was so involved in our lives as children that we... He was years before his time. He was the kind of man that would get us up for breakfast in the morning and put us to bed at night because my mother was so busy. So he was incredibly unusual. We all had a very close relationship with him, and each of us thought we were his favourites. That's how amazing he was. He was just amazing. So the poor man died of cancer 32 years ago. So I really still miss him, and I think about him every day. And I suppose it is a real loss. And I suppose every parent is a real loss. But for us, it was a huge loss for him to die. But the other thing about him is that he was from a rural part of Ireland in East Galway, and he was an Irish speaker. So all of us children spoke Irish as well as English, which was unusual again in the inner city. And he was from a farm, obviously. And the second poem, Walking on Walls, is really kind of set in the farm that he grew up in or that he was from. But he had a love of nature, and nature really and truly was his way of connecting with sort of a transcendent life or a spiritual life. Nature was his, you know, his God is everywhere kind of thing. So God was in everything for him.
Right, that's a wonderful background.
So will I give it a go?
Yes, please. We want to hear about Lady Bird.
So the poem really did sort of come out of the experience when he was dying, and he died a sort of like a terribly sudden death from cancer, but he was only ill for 3 weeks. And of course, in retrospect, we know what a blessing that is to not suffer for a long time. And I suppose we were all waiting sort of in the kind of suspended, a state of suspension, that it was so terribly hard to wait for him, you know. So anyway, I wrote the beginning of this poem at that time, about 30 years ago. And then I developed it more recently to do the second bit that happened more recently. So, ladybirds. Once, as I worked at home, a ladybird landed on the back of my hand. And I knew, I don't know how, that my father was dying. Crying, I flew to his bedside and whispered that I loved him, catching his last breath as he died. I didn't think it was odd to see a ladybird in the heart of housework. I believed, Dad called them Boeing Day, that ladybirds were his messengers, landing on the back of hands, or sometimes in a whirl of herbs. Like that Christmas, in the middle of a family quarrel, I gathered sage from the garden and laid it on the chopping board to add to breadcrumbs, butter, onions, making turkey stuffing. Before my knife could strike, out of the tangle of winter leaves, a ladybird appeared, and I knew Da sent his little Boeing Day to heal raw wounds inflicted by a carnage of words.
Oh, wow. Thank you for transporting us back to your home and what happened. But, you know, I said to myself, as I read this, first of all, I wanted to know more about that word, Boeing. And it meant
day, yeah.
And it meant, and when I went to look it up, it meant the Gaelic word, the Irish Gaelic, meant God's little cow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't relate how that was that, but as I begin to read, it also means that every time you see a ladybird and he lands on you in your home, it means prosperity. But your poem said, and I was searching the Google, come on, tell me what's happening, when they land on your backhand, and it wasn't giving me any grief, but you said when it landed on your backhand, it means dying, and that your father's actually told you guys quite a lot about Lady Bird. So that was an education that didn't go in the library. It was actually your father just with his love for nature, just making you guys aware about the nature. And then he gave us a quick recipe for stuffing.
Stuffing.
I said, yes, I have other herbs, but maybe I can't plant some sage to grow before Christmas.
Well, it is the most delicious stuffing. Sage and onion stuffing, yeah. I would recommend it highly.
Breadcrumbs and butter. So you see, we got a bit of recipe there. And I wrote it down. And that's what poetry does. Although we're laughing at something that you said, it was quite, for you at the time, it was quite serious. And I think many people can relate to when someone is dying in your house. But you put it in such a lively manner. And you know, even the ladybird coming again in the garden,
right,
thing. And, you know, breaking that whole lot of carnage of words. I love the word carnage of words. You know, my God, how destructive that is. but you don't know until you're speaking those. But Christmas brings those situations, doesn't it?
Well, those family quarrels, especially around Christmas time or when family get together, sometimes they're pretty hard. And but the ladybird was able to heal them. You know, it was really just beautiful. That is, you know, and it wasn't really like a big thing. It was so small, but it was so meaningful. That was what was so. And of course, in winter, imagine a ladybird in winter.
Yeah,
you know,
that's really unusual.
This doesn't happen, you know.
So I thank you. That is so. See, that's educational. All of us here, we're saying thank you, Bird, for bringing the ladybird back.
Thank you. Thank you.
So anyway, today, this month, we are talking about fathers. You've already started it off. But if I said, gave you father as a prompt, what would you say about fathers? I mean, what does that mean to you?
Well, I suppose I really do think that we're entering a new-ish era around fathering, and I suppose as a kind of a quasi academic, I'm very interested in the meaning of words. And you know, there's no real sort of depth of meaning for what fathers do in the same way as there is for mothers. So the verb to mother, we all kind of can understand that to mother is to be loved and cared for and everything like that. But to father is to inseminate a woman. Do you know that it really is a very harsh meaning, and it really takes away from fathers what fathers actually do. And I suppose that is one of the things that strikes me about my father, is that how absolutely amazingly hands-on he was. Do you know, in spite of being a sort of a strong man, an unskilled labourer, as I was saying, that he was working with other men, and he was working in hard manual work and so on, but he was so sort of caring and kind and gentle with us as children. I would say that he was a father in a million, or in fact, 6 billion. He was completely unique, yeah.
Oh, that is good to have that testament, because we have so many absent fathers. But you said about
right.
The harsh word of father, which I think I'm going to go and play on a little bit more after this. Thank you for bringing that to us, because with mothers, we do know. We know exactly what mothers are and what they do and all those things. But then again, you said something else, that your father was hands-on with you guys. He really valued your experience of fatherhood. It's so different from most people, but it's really something that you treasured. And I would like you on that note, if you don't mind, to read your second poem, which also brings your father in again, which is called Walking on Walls.
So I wrote this poem much more recently, but it really brought me back to a time when I was about 5 or 6, and we were where his family home was down the country. And again, that was really quite unusual at the time, because as a father, he was bringing us to sort of on holidays and to meet his mother and his brothers and so on. So that it was, you know, again, we were inclined to think of, say, a family holiday where parents bring their kids away and things like that. But this was our holiday, and we loved it, absolutely loved it, going down to the west of Ireland. And he was always so there. And the funny thing is that his brothers, he had two bachelor brothers, and they were really hands-on men. You know, they were rural men, again, very hard-working manual workers and so on. But again, they had a love of nature. They had a love of the land, and they had a real appreciation for us as city kids visiting and feeding us and making nice things for us and everything like that. So we had a wonderful time when we go on our holidays to the west of Ireland. So the poem really sort of sparked from something that I saw in Maynooth, quite just near the town of Maynooth. There's a kind of like a big, well, a small mound, I suppose I'd call it, and there's walls all around it. And there was this kid just tottering on the wall. And it just reminded me of something that happened when I was about 5 or 6. So I'll read it now, if that's okay.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that.
Walking on walls. A child totters on a narrow wall, parapet skirting a little hill. Her mam holds her hand until the girl jumps onto the springy soil. And the child's eyes are dancing, and she runs back to the beginning of the wall, her joy overflowing as she scrambles up the mound again. And I remember walking on walls when I was a child like that girl. The boundary between a lawn and a farmland boreen, balanced on top of the concrete, poised with outstretched arms, breathing clear air, brave beating heart. I step by stepped on 6-inch feet. On one side, soft mossy sward, but on the other, loose, sharp grit. And when I teetered to the end, halted by a tall gate pier, I flew into my father's arms. Beaming, he hugged and kissed me, but I wanted to spring down and run to the beginning again.
Oh my word, isn't that wonderful? And I suppose the other thing is that in 2022, or you know, whenever you saw that child, the father, this time it was a mother, she was still doing those things, and then you were doing it. And then when I was reading, I could remember my children doing, I could remember, do you know what I'm saying? That they just had this thing about their father. They'll just jump into his arm in anything. I'm like, what about me? I'm mom. Do you know?
Right.
And so it just brings out that childhood, but that tenderness. Thank you for sharing this so much. Now, you know, we don't want to leave you, but we have to, because the time has come very close to an end. And where can we actually get your work from? Do you have an anthology or something we could purchase? Because these two is just like a taster. You're just giving us some, you just whet our appetite for your work.
Well, honestly, you are absolutely so kind, but I've really published very, very little. I suppose I'm only, because I have time now, I have time to write. So I'm really only beginning to understand the craft of writing. So I'm really only a very, very early beginner, and hopefully sometime in the future. But I have nothing really ready for sort of like real publication at the moment, Mary.
So, but we'll look forward to that anthology, and if you're in any other work that we could get, because I know, you know, people, writers do write with other writers and they publish things together, so that'd be really nice. But these two beautiful work has shown us that, wow, you could take us to places and give us a reminder with your words. Thank you for coming to talk to us today.
Thank you.
And we really do appreciate every moment that you've given us. Thank you for all that you've done for us today. We thank you. We really love you. And do get your anthology finished and come back to us in, so that we could help you launch it in Near FM here.
Well, I would love that, Mary. And thank you so much for the encouragement. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. Well, thank you. And the Irish word is slán, and that means your health. And thanks again to you and to everybody in Near FM. Thank you for the day.
This is the events page. First of all, we have the Dublin Festival of History. The Dublin Festival of History takes place through early and mid-October, culminating in the big events at the Printwork. The Dublin Festival of History is Ireland's biggest free history festival and is supported by Dublin City Council and is programmed and managed by Dublin City Public Library. Now, you can get more information on that in www.dublinfestivalofhistory.ie. I repeat that, www.dublinfestivalofhistory.ie. Now, why is that important for writers? A lot of writers write historical novels, and apart from that, it's just great to know history. Okay, so you have a wonderful time there. Check that out. We also have the Waterford Writers Weekend called Imagine. It's an arts festival. This began with Sean Don Writers Festival in the 1990s, then evolved to an annual Waterford Writers Weekend, and now has been incorporated into Imagine, Waterford's main long art festival. This festival promotes the art and craft of writing and celebrate creativity of all in all generations. So you can get more information there, www.waterfordwritersweekend.ie. I think it's something I'm going to check out. Okay, so let's do it. Now I'm going to leave you with one more. Okay, there's the Red Line Book Festival. This is held in October each year. The Red Line Book Festival celebrates the very best in local, national, and international writing. The festival takes place in various venues across South Dublin County and is funded by the South Dublin County Council and is managed by the South Dublin Libraries and Art. The South Dublin County Council, this takes place in early October. That's the Red Line Book Festival. You don't want to miss it. If you want to get more information, www.redlinebookfestival.ie. Even if you don't write and enter the competition, just go and enjoy all the things that's going on there. So that's all for the early October that's going on. And we'll meet you again in our next episode of International Writers Network, when we're going to feature more guests for you. Take care. Bye-bye.